morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, June 26, 2023. Some motorists in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say unprofessional traffic police officers are harassing drivers across the town.
So as soon as they flag you down, it's them taking off your number plate, them abusing you. Something you just don't leave any traffic, a corner of any traffic police being okay, because they've spoiled your day already.
And a women's advocate says South Sudanese women should include their voices on matters to do with transitional justice. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Sudan, where fighting between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces continues across the country and is threatening to engulf the whole Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
Fighting between Sudan's army and the paramilitary's rapid support forces flared up across Khartoum and parts of Darfur in a Lubaid town over the weekend as the conflict entered its 11th week. The RSF claimed they captured the base of the heavily armed Central Police Reserve in the southern part of Khartoum on Sunday. The current intense episode of fighting comes as a series of U.S.-Saudi brokered ceasefire deals failed to hold as the rival military factions battled for control of the capital and other parts of the country. The United States and Saudi Arabia adjourned talks in the Saudi town of Jeddah last week, saying the talks were not achieving their goals. The United Nations says 2.5 million people have been displaced by Sudan's conflict, with some 600,000 people forced into neighboring countries. Thousands of people have been killed since the outbreak of violence in mid-April, according to the country's health ministry. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Juba, where South Sudan's Minister of Information, Michael Makuei Luat, says the government will continue to engage the Anglican primate, Justin Badi Arama, and the former Archbishop of the Jonglei Internal Province, Ruben Akurdid, to resolve a two-year conflict between the two church leaders. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
A press secretary in the office of primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan invited journalists in Juba to attend a ceremony on Sunday for reinstating Bishop Ruben Akurdid, former High Bishop of the Internal Province of Jonglei. But Primate Arama and Bishop Akurdid could not agree on the terms and conditions for reinstatement. Arama says Akurdid presented new conditions contrary to the laws of the Anglican Church of South Sudan.
We could not go ahead with the reinstatement. The main contentious issue was he wanted to be reinstated as a full archbishop for 3 months. But we told him that the church laws doesn't go that way. He has to be reinstated as retired archbishop of Jonglei, of which he said he will first go and consult his people, then he will come back with the feedback. So it ended that way, and we continue to pray for him.
Archbishop Arama expelled Bishop Akurdid in August 2020 after he created 3 dioceses in Jonglei and consecrated 3 bishops without an approval from the Anglican Church in South Sudan. Akurdid apologized to the head of the Anglican Church last week, hoping for the lifting of his dismissal and reinstatement. He says he feels the Anglican Church did not honor his apology.
I'm very disappointed. We have failed as a church to resolve this problem. So he went to the president for help. The president came in and gave advice how to be solved. But the president came up with a resolution that I will be reinstated and then given 3 months and to unite the church and then also to confirm the 3 dioceses and their bishops. This one seemed as it was okay, but in the morning when we were in the office, it was opposite. So I'm very disappointed.
Michael Makuei, South Sudan's Minister of Information and Government spokesperson, says Arama's latest decision has surprised the government of South Sudan.
People were highly enthusiastic to see this problem coming to an end. To our disappointment, as representatives of the government, we were informed that, yes, the frogging. And that will be immediately followed by retirement. Disregarding the 3 months which we had proposed as a solution for all this.
Makuei says Bishop Akurdit has traveled to the Jonglei State Capital Bor to consult his supporters before accepting new conditions for his reinstatement as the Hajj Bishop of the Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still in Juba, some women leaders and activists are meeting in a transitional justice mechanism process that is gender responsive. A representative of UN Women says traditional justice mechanism should place survivors of violence at the center of every process for legal redress. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Women rights activists and gender experts meeting in Juba say transitional justice mechanism in South Sudan should reflect the views of women in two bills due for presentation to the Council of Ministers and the Parliament for ratifications. The two bills are expected to pave the way for the government to establish mechanisms for holding perpetrators of sexual-related violence and human rights abuses accountable for crimes committed during the conflict. Jacqueline Nasiwa is a women rights activist who says she wants to see the transitional justice mechanism that protects survivors of conflict-related violence.
The participation and consultations that will have to be done should consider the survivor needs, respect the survivor priorities, and also to facilitate meaningful participation of survivors in this process. And that means that survivors become central of our interventions and our approaches to transitional justice. And this comes in form of designing programs that take into consideration the psychosocial support needs of the survivors.
The Ministry of Justice has drafted two bills for compensation and reparations and truth, healing and reconciliation that are yet to be approved by the Council of Ministers and the National Parliament. Once approved, the laws will facilitate the formation of the transitional justice mechanisms. Sheila Bedwanti Ketharus is Senior Women's Protection Advisor at the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. She says women leaders should ensure they have a voice in the proposed laws.
Effective participation of women in the transitional justice processes ensures that key gender concerns are highlighted and debated for consideration and inclusion into the legal framework for the transitional justice mechanisms in South Sudan. It is indeed important to focus on making sure that women's perspectives are reflected.
Pauline Magola is with the UN Women. She says transitional justice has a transformative capacity to bring gender equality in South Sudan.
Transitional justice processes can be leveraged not only to bring justice to survivors of individual human rights violations, but also to address the social relationships that enabled these violations in the first place. And this includes unequal gender power relations in society. In other words, transitional justice is a powerful tool to address gender inequality and has the potential to be gender transformative. This workshop happens at a critical time. The two bills are yet to be tabled in Parliament, and this workshop provides an opportunity.
Jimia Yusuf works with the non-profit, the South Sudan Women Entrepreneurs Association. She says the transitional justice process should treat women and girls with respect.
We want to see equality in both for the men and the women. Because we women, we are really suffering. When it comes to the issue concerning about the cases of GBV, you may raise the concern and take the case to the court. You find out the case has disappeared. The perpetrator is taken out in the back door, but without your notifications.
Chapter 5 of the 2018 Revitalized Agreement on the Resolution of Conflict in the Republic of South Sudan requires the Transitional Government of National Unity to establish the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, the Compensation and Reparations Authority, and a hybrid court to address human rights violations committed during South Sudan's conflict. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still in Juba, some motorists in the South Sudan's capital are accusing traffic police officers of harassment, intimidation, and sometimes extortion. But the head of the public relations at the traffic police department in Juba says officers who abuse their powers are acting on their own. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Ayakwal drives at least for 6 hours daily while running errands around Juba town. She and other motorists say some traffic police officers are rude compared to their counterparts in other East African countries like Kenya and Uganda.
So as soon as they flag you down, it's them taking off your number plate, them abusing you. Something you just don't leave any traffic, a corner of any traffic police being okay, because they've spoiled your day already. They just fine you for things that are not even existing. And it's always a group of them doing the same. It's a recurring behavior which has to be changed.
According to South Sudan Trafficked Act, police officers have powers to stop motorists as part of routine monitoring of drivers' paperwork for compliance with traffic laws of the country. Traffic police officers are also authorized to arrest reckless and drunk drivers to ensure road safety for other motorists and pedestrians. According to the latest World Health Organization data published in 2020, road traffic accidents death in South Sudan reached 4,000 or 4.8% of total death recorded in the country. Juma Bido is an entertainment specialist whose work requires lots of driving around Juba town. He says some traffic police officers who control the streets of the capital have forgotten their core duties and are busy collecting and demanding money from drivers.
It's all about sometimes I'm avoiding them from the main road because sometimes they will waste your time when you want to go to the office or you have a meeting and somewhere here, and then they on the road they will waste your time, okay? And that's why sometimes we use the road inside the areas instead of the main road, just to avoid wasting our time on the roads.
Lieutenant Roy Mon Roy is the head of information and public relations at the Traffic Police Department in Juba. He says traffic police officers have the right to stop and check the motorists at any time. Roy cautioned traffic police officers to avoid frustrating drivers, but instead make the roads safer for all users in Juba and the towns across the country. He urged motorists to promptly report any misconduct by giving details of errant traffic police officers.
We encourage the citizens every time we speak to the media that if you have been assaulted by traffic police or your rights have been violated, please come and inform us at the headquarters, the Department of Complaints. A team will be formed to visit where the case took place and the law will take its course, because this is not what we have been trained to do. We do not serve by harassing or assaulting motorists. It is not part of our mandate.
Steven Kumbonyeki is a real estate entrepreneur who is always on the move meeting his clients in Juba. He says driving around the town can be a nightmare due to behaviors of some unprofessional traffic police officers.
It's really hard. They get to waste much of your time on the road. And if you had errands to run, you miss it out. If you had businesses to close, you lose it out. Just in an argument over a minor thing, or they might need a petty cash from you. So we really need to address these issues as citizens and as young people.
Lieutenant Roy insists that some of the reg traffic police officers harassing motorists on the streets of South Sudan's capital, Juba, are acting on their own. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Some students at public universities in South Sudan will soon have a reason to smile. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Students at public universities in South Sudan have welcomed a decision by the Transitional Government of National Unity to initiate Students Support Fund as required by the 2018 peace agreement. The fund, which was approved on Friday, caters for accommodation, basic needs and tuition for students from poor families. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Juba.
The Council of Ministers meeting chaired by the President Salva Kiir approved more than 105 million South Sudanese pounds, or an equivalent of $105,000, to support students from less privileged families. Michael McQuay, South Sudan's Minister of Information, says the fund will help students pay for tuition at various public universities across the country and complete their studies on time.
That support fund is actually a very important fund for the students. It is usually meant for students who are vulnerable in the universities and higher institutions of learning. So that support fund could provide for accommodation, for feeding, for health care, for sanitation materials, for tuition fee, and so forth for the disadvantaged students.
Pierre Yak, a fourth-year law student at the University of Juba, says he welcomes the decision, saying it will enable students who have been struggling to clear tuition fee.
For so long, we have been having issues and no one seems to care about our problems. But now we are seeing a government that is trying to respond to the problems that we have been facing, especially students that are in public universities. We usually find it hard sometimes to meet all the financial requirements by the school, especially that school fees have been increased. Now there are so many students who cannot really afford the new fees structure.
Samuel Agul Panchol, a third-year student of public administration at the Dr. John Gareng Memorial University of Science and Technology in Bor, says the fund comes handy.
The students pursuing different courses and studying in different public institutions also have been facing challenges in which they sometimes fail to solve them. So if the Council of Ministers came up with a decision of giving a grant to the public institution, that is a great move. And it shows that the Council of Ministers are working hard to make sure that the country experience the stability that citizens want.
Panchol adds he hopes the Ministries of Higher Education and Finance protect fund from corrupt individuals who might steal from the fund.
When grant is issued out, at the end of the day, the beneficiaries of that budget don't see it happening or don't reach them. That is the challenge. But what I'm hoping is that let this bill, let this grant reach to the population at the grassroots.
Chapter 4 of the South Sudan Peace Agreement stipulates that the Transitional Government of National Unity should create new 7 institutions, including the Student Support Fund. The long-awaited fund provides an opportunity for students at public universities to complete their studies on time, especially those who are less privileged. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
At least 36 million people suffer from drug use disorders across the world. A report by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime says majority of drug users face stigma and discrimination, in which in long run harm their physical and mental health, preventing them from accessing the help they need. As the world marks International Day Against Drug Abuse and Illicit Trafficking, some countries in sub-Saharan Africa are among the top 22 in the world in terms of per capita alcohol consumption growth. For VOA News, Maureen Ojiambo reports.
According to the latest annual report by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, nearly 284 million people worldwide are using illicit drugs such as cocaine, cannabis, hallucinogens, opiates, and sedative hypnotics. With this year's theme of the day being People First, Stop Stigma and Discrimination, Strengthen Prevention, the UN is calling on member states to raise awareness about the AIDS and hepatitis epidemics among drug users. Gada Wali is the executive director of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime.
People who suffer from drug use disorders but are blamed and stigmatized instead of receiving treatment and care. People who inject drugs and are far more likely to be living with HIV but face stigma, discrimination, and barriers to treatment. People who are in prison for minor drug offenses, rather than being given a pathway to recovery and rehabilitation. People who continue to suffer pain because of unequal availability of important medicines containing controlled substances. It is time to stigmatize the illicit drug market and not the people who are harmed by it.
In sub-Saharan Africa, at least 41.6% of people say they use any substance, with Central Africa having the highest percentage of 55.5%. In Kenya, illicit alcohol is the most abused substance, causing harm and disease among young people. Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua has launched what he terms as a crackdown on illicit alcohol that will see illegal breweries closing down.
They have come up with a proposal to have very heavy penalties that will make this business unattractive. They have come up with laws to impound all vehicles carrying drugs and illicit alcohol and forfeit them to the county. They have come up with proposals to shut down forever any establishment selling illicit alcohol and drugs.
The United Nations acknowledges the importance of taking a people-centered approach to drug policies with a focus on human rights, compassion, and evidence-based practices. Wally says drugs propagate violence, harm, and exploitation, and that a more inclusive approach is needed to fight illicit drugs.
We need focused law enforcement interventions to stop drug traffickers from feeding on misery, as several drug types hit new production records and the threat of synthetic drugs expands rapidly. And we need to invest heavily in prevention, awareness raising, early interventions and services to build the resilience of our communities. Today, let us stand together against the world drug problem and put people first.
The UN is calling on member states to uphold the human rights of people who use drugs, including expanding prevention and treatment programs and health services. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
From California, we move to Nairobi, where Somali refugees are heading to Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya to register for IDs in hopes of securing relocation to the United States and other Western countries. The rush follows the creation of a program that allows Americans to sponsor refugees arriving through the U.S. Refugee Admission Program. Juma Majanja reports from Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya.
It's a beehive of activity at the Dadaab refugee camps in northeastern Kenya as the newly arrived register for refugee IDs. Since late last year, the camps have seen more refugees from the neighboring Somalia who are escaping drought and hunger.
The numbers currently are 135,000 profiled and undergoing registration in Dadaab, with an influx of about 2,000 per day, and it's high. That's a high number.
Early this year, the U.S. government launched the Welcome Corps, a private sponsorship program that allows Americans to assist refugees arriving through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program and support their resettlement and integration in the United States. At one of the temporary resettlements for newly arrived and registered refugees, Nortu Hussein is pondering her next move. Having fled food insecurity in Somalia, the mother of seven says she hopes to resettle in the U.S.
I want to go to America so I can find work and provide for my children. My children are malnourished and suffering. Look at this, even this other one. If we go to the U.S., they will get medical support and other important services they need. I cannot continue keeping them here in these conditions because they may not survive.
A few meters away is Abdi Osman's homestead. He says life in Somalia became unbearable after he lost all his livestock to drought. He, his wife, and 9 children moved to the camp to seek help.
America is a land of opportunity. I have seen refugees who have been given the opportunity to resettle in the U.S., improve their lives after they get there.
The Kenyan government says it is working on a plan to integrate refugees, and it welcomes help from its partners to support the refugee population.
American cops are very much welcome in supporting the programs, in supporting the relocation, in supporting the refugees. We are creating hope away from home.
There are nearly 700,000 refugees in Kenya, according to the country's Department of Refugee Affairs. Since 2015, only 59,000 have been resettled to third countries. Unregistered refugees like Hussein and Osman and their families will have to wait for full registration before they can get consideration for resettlement. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Dadaab Refugee Camps, Kenya.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, when I leave you with Kwabena and the song Donobi. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adrius Regis, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent defiance of international law and the norms that bind us is making international and regional cooperation to maintain peace and security ever more difficult, said Rosemary DiCarlo, UN Undersecretary General for Political and Peacebuilding Affairs. This means that when it comes to stabilizing one of the world's most restive regions, the Middle East, the strong relationship between the United States and the Arab League is critically important. The United States believes strongly that the Arab League is vital to both regional and international peace and security, said United States Representative to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield. The Arab League plays a critical role across 5 conflicts, she said.
In Yemen, we see a window of opportunity to achieve durable peace. We recognize the efforts of Arab states to facilitate dialogue.
Then there are the Arab League's efforts to blunt the impact of the war in Sudan on the civilian population. The United States appreciates the Arab League's efforts to facilitate humanitarian access, a cessation of hostilities, and a resumption of an inclusive political process in Sudan, she said. In Libya, the United States encourages the Arab League to stand with the people of Libya as they call for long overdue elections. We also hope the Arab League will support the withdrawal of foreign fighters in Libya and their rehabilitation and reintegration in their home countries. Then there is the question of Syria and that country's readmission into the Arab League.
We do not believe Assad has earned his place there, and the United States will not normalize relations with the regime or lift our sanctions until there is progress toward a political solution. However, we do have shared goals, and we want to work with the Arab League to defend the human rights of the Syrian people and address humanitarian and security issues on the ground. The bottom line is this: the needs of the Syrian people should be front and center in any and all engagements with the regime.
Finally, we applaud the Arab League's invitation of Ukrainian President Zelensky to address the Arab League summit, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. The League of Arab States shoulder a weighty responsibility, she said. They have a strong partner in the United States and in the United Nations. We are committed to working with you to find creative solutions to today's most pressing challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.